Welcome to As for Football's Army Football Show with your host and As for Football First Captain Rob Wright, an insider's guide for cadets, old grads, and college football fans to follow the Army football team throughout their season as they seek to claim the Commander-in-Chief Trophy.
Welcome back, Army fans. You should be riding the high of your life. Army just blanked Navy 15-0 in the fog on the banks of the Hudson. It's Jordan Horvath with you here this weekend out of Atlanta, Georgia. I have Dan in Coastal Connecticut, James in Corpus Christi, Texas. And as always, we're brought to you by Emblem Athletic. Be a gear hero for your unit. We use them for our Christmas Attack t-shirts. The experience was totally easy, super seamless, much faster than expected. But we're here to talk about Army, Navy, and Army Air Force. Dan, how are you feeling after that win?
Yo, man, that was awesome. And also extremely nerve-wracking. It is very, very easy to pound a couple of very heavy beers watching a game like that, which I did, and I woke up with a headache. So shout out to me for surviving.
Hey, surviving, not thriving. James, yeah. How you doing?
Well, I was the only Army fan in a room of about 12 people, and everyone else was rooting against me. So I was far more elated than my counterparts. It was a weird experience, but I mean, I'm happy, so.
Well, you did voluntarily join the Navy, so I don't really have a ton
true.
Of sympathy
for
you.
I got a question for you before we go on. Did they think that they were going to win? I mean, what was the feeling in the room on their chances?
I get the sense that that Navy fans had an attitude of slight pessimism. I think they knew that they didn't have anything going for them at the quarterback position. They had a lot of optimism on the defensive side of the ball, which was fair optimism and you know, held us to, you know, 15 points. So, and really they held the offense to what, 13 points.
Yeah.
And the only touchdown came on a short field. So that was deserved optimism, but they sort of knew that they were, something special was going to have to happen for that offense to get going. And they were right.
Yeah, they definitely did not have that spark that they were expecting. Like we've talked about, you know, Keenan Reynolds just ran the option so well, and then they just had Malcolm Perry last few years, who was just so electric, and they haven't been able to fill that quarterback position. Going into the recap overall, nothing that we're about to tell you should be new news to you. If it is, you're either like Dan and you drank way too much and don't remember the game, or you didn't watch the game. Either way, what the hell are you doing? Like, this is Army-Navy, greatest rivalry in sports. We beat Navy 15-0. College game day was there out on Lusk Reservoir, and I personally was hoping they'd be down on the plane, but it was pretty stinking cool to see them out on Lusk with Mikey as the backdrop, and they had the Apaches coming through. It was a fantastic show. Ken had a little hissy fit when he did his interview. It was definitely worthwhile. Really happy with the way they did it. I think College Game Day and the guys really enjoyed being there, especially Kirk, because he got to ride in the helicopter and do his picks from the helicopter when they went to the airport. So that was pretty cool. But overall, the game itself was very conservative on both sides, like it always is. The last 5 or the last 15 games have all gone under. It was a chess match instead of a checkers match. It was just a constant field position game. We really depended on our defense and our strong punting to keep Navy bottled up, and then eventually forced a mistake that allowed us to get that touchdown. Navy played good defense while hoping to break just a big play with Xavier Arline, and they did, but they weren't able to punch it in to actually get points. Both game plans really worked as expected, but I don't think Navy was expecting to get stuffed on, you know, 1st and 1 to get a touchdown 4 times. Army definitely raised the chain and defended the Hudson on that play. Dan, what did you see overall on the Army offense?
Well, yeah, like you said, it was very conservative, right? We saw 134 yards rushing, 2.5 yards per carry. Tyler led the team with 26 carries for 96 yards and 1 touchdown. That's 3.7 yards per carry, but man, he is always boom or bust. You know, he's not a big guy, but he's got a lot of speed. I think he runs pretty well in traffic. to be 5'8", but he's much better in open space. I think it's worth pointing out that slot back AJ Howard had 2 carries for 12 yards, which made me wonder how much Navy was basing what was going to happen based on position groups, because I don't think Howard is a guy you're necessarily looking to get the ball. He's more a guy you're thinking is going to be a blocking back. Is everybody else pretty much struggled. I don't know, man. I guess my biggest takeaway, and I know we're going to talk about this a little later, is that it looked to me like they called almost everything on offense. I don't know how many reads they actually let Tyler make, but it could not possibly have been more than 5.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, personally, I have mixed feelings about that. In some ways, it's okay. You got the quarterback in there. You're going to let the quarterback make the decisions. On the other hand, this is this kid's second start. It's the biggest game of his life. Yeah. Once in a lifetime opportunity. It's wet. It's rainy. Do you really want him pitching the ball when he fumbled 3 times against Georgia Southern?
By the way, the fog is so thick that you can't even see it all the way across the field. So, yeah, no, I hear that.
Yeah. I will say, though, 134 yards rushing, 2.5 yards per carry. When I look at that number and I reflect on the game, my immediate thought is, what is wrong with our offensive line? You know, throughout the season, we've seen different issues with not getting a push when we needed to, or guys not coming off their block, or the splits being too wide, whatever. James, what do you think? Do you think the offensive line is to blame for this lackluster offensive production?
So the offensive line was clearly losing the battle in the trenches now. And I'm sure that Dan will have something to say about why that might be. But I think that it was pretty clear that both defenses were dominating the trenches. I don't know if Dan, you want to go into a little bit more why you think that might be.
I don't know if it has anything to do with the trenches per se. I mean, you'd certainly like to see the fullbacks get at least 2 to 3 yards coming off just a good push on the O-line. However, you know, Navy was playing their linebackers right at the line of scrimmage, and even their safeties maybe 2 yards off the line of scrimmage. Army threw exactly one passing play for 28 yards, and it could easily have gone for a touchdown. And I'm just going to tell you, had they gone back to the pass, even a 5-yard pass, it was going to be there all night, as Navy was just not defending that. They didn't do it. I think that tells you everything that you need to know about the way they looked at this game.
Yeah.
I mean, both coaches were being very conservative in this game, and I think that neither coach wants to lose an Army-Navy game because they try to do something crazy and it completely backfires.
Well, we saw Navy try to do something crazy and they got a safety.
That was in desperation time. You know, that was fourth quarter and you know, down by 2 scores at that point. So. Yeah, it's a little bit different.
I got the sense that both coaches were trying to force the other team into a bad position where they had to get outside their rhythm and force that mistake. And Army succeeded and Navy didn't. Although, if they'd punched it in on that goal line stand, it definitely would have gone the other way. I'm not saying the game would have gone the other way, but Army would have had to take more chances.
Yeah, I agree. And for better or worse, you know, that would have been interesting to see if the total amount scored would have been vastly different had we been more aggressive because of that. But Dan, you're absolutely right. You know, Navy had 3 down defensive linemen. They were playing 2 linebackers up. So they had 5 guys on the line, and then they just put Fagot in the middle of the field and they brought the safeties up about 1/2 yard behind him. So
yeah. I was really surprised Fagot finished the game. I thought for sure that Sandy McCoy would come in there and clean his clock, but I didn't see that happen even one time.
Yeah. So speaking of the Navy defense, James, what'd you see from the Army defense? Obviously, we played fantastic, but what are your takeaways?
So, I mean, the biggest, most memorable part of that game, I think, will be the goal line stand. Coming out of the half, you know, both sides are doing halftime adjustments. I know most of Navy's coaches came down from the press box to coach from the field. I'm not quite sure what Army said. I know Munkin alluded to it before going into the half. I'm not sure what ended up happening. But big shifts. And then right off the bat, the 2 biggest plays that Navy was going to have all day long, an 11-yard run followed by a 52-yard run, sets up Navy at the 2-yard line. And I'm thinking, like, crap. Like, this game is shifting. Momentum's shifting. This is tough. It felt a little bit like, you know, in the first half last year where we came out with that first touchdown. And then, you know, from there, the momentum shifted and it was just happening after halftime. But, you know, first down, stop them up the middle. And then second down, they tried that little pitch play to the outside, and it kind of got blown up right away. That third down was the keep from Arline, I believe, where his knee dragged on the ground, and one ref called a touchdown, one called it, you know, short. They looked at it, and they said, no, it's short, and, you know, stayed with the ruling on the field, which I thought was the right call. And then on fourth down, they gave it to their fullback who went in, and they called the play dead. I know there were some Navy fans that were complaining that they blew the whistle too early, compared to how early they blew the whistle.
That was definitely the right call.
Yeah, and give the CBS announcers credit. They got upset with the refs earlier when they didn't blow that whistle, you know, quickly. So he clearly had not broken the plane when the whistle was blown, and it was rightfully Army's ball. So
well, his forward momentum was stopped. So yes. The play is over when you're stopped. It's not, oh, I'm stopped, let me reach out the ball. He was stopped.
However, if they were not to have called, if they did not call the whistle and he had stretched out afterwards and they went back and looked at it, I think they would have given him the touchdown, even though that, you know, by the letter of the law wouldn't have been the correct call. They usually do that. So it's sort of just when an official on the field decides that forward progress is stopped, they blow the whistle and that's what they go with. And they got it right.
I don't agree with that. I thought he was clearly down. I thought the play was clearly over.
Oh, it was. And I'm saying if the ref had not called it dead when he did.
Yeah. No, okay. Fair enough.
Yeah. But other than that, you know, five tackles for a loss. Eric Smith and Amadeo West leading the day with nine tackles each. Amadeo West, the biggest tackle was that stop on fourth down on the goal line. You got to feel good for him. Second Lieutenant West. Darion McDonald had five tackles, and he also had that safety, which was, I mean, that was the, looked like the nail in the coffin at that point, especially with how Navy's offense was working. Navy's quarterbacks went 1-for-7 passing for 9 yards, so held that passing. You know, going into this game, I thought, you know, if Navy's going to win this game, it's going to be because they get lucky on one or two passes, and the Army secondary took care of that. They fumbled twice. One was the botch snap that they picked up almost immediately, and the other one was the pitch that linebacker John Radigan picked up on the 13-yard line, which led to Army's only touchdown of the day. And then if you take out our line's one breakaway run, Navy's averaging 1.6 yards per carry. So Army rush defense did a really good job as well. In total, Mids ran 42 offensive plays, not including their 8 punts. And they were 1-for-11 on third down, 0-for-2 on fourth down. They had 12 drives the entire game, and on 10 of them, they did not get a first down. So
that's amazing. That is amazing.
Yeah, just wow. You know, incredible defensive performance. But as incredible as that was, you know, Dan, you were right. Special teams really carried the day. Plebe kicker Quinn Moretzky went 2-for-3 on field goals with a long of 40. The miss was a bobbled snap and a bobbled hold. So, you know, he kind of just stood stationary and kind of kicked it, and it was short. It almost looked like he had enough time to kind of take a step back and go again. But, you know, in the moment, you're not thinking that. He did make the only extra point, though. And then Zach Harding had 7 punts for 262 yards, dropped 5 punts inside the 20. He had a long of 49 when Army was pinned deep after the goal line stand. We recovered the ball on the 1-yard line. Set up a total of 3 returns for 2 yards. So special teams, especially kick coverage, really has come to play this year and has come full circle. And then Tyrell Robinson has 2 punt returns with a long of 12 yards. Just a few quick notes on the game. Army's largest margin of victory since 1986, when it was 27-7. This is the first shutout since 1969. The score of that game was 27-0. And this is the first ever win at West Point. We were 0-3 up to this point. So finally got a win at West Point and finally scored a touchdown in an Army Navy game at West Point. We've been waiting 120, 140 years for that. So about damn time.
I remember in the late third quarter, when the score was still 3-0 and it was punt after punt after punt. I remember tweeting out like, you know what? I'm perfectly okay with this game turning into our punter is better than your punter, because it was, we were so clearly winning that special teams battle.
Yeah.
That I was like, you know, we'll win this game if we play that game.
I would have taken 3-0. Like, I'm totally happy. Win's a win. Don't care. 3-0 is perfectly fine with me.
Oh, God. That would be so hard. It was just nerve-wracking. You know, when they got the touchdown and they were up 10, it was like, all right, the way this game is going, ain't nobody going to score 10 points in the last 10 minutes of this game.
Yeah. And that felt good. It felt good to finally be like, hey, our defense isn't going to let them score 2 touchdowns on, you know, 2 drives. Like, this feels good that we have confidence in our defense. So, speaking of defense, Dan, why don't you take us through the good, and then James and I will take you through the bad and the ugly.
All right. On defense, the good, as we said, that goal line stand. This was the second or maybe the third game this year in which Army's defense outscored the other team's offense. So, I believe we outscored the other team. Team's offense against MTSU. Did we outscore ULM's offense? For those of us who can't remember. Well, anyway, somebody let me know, because I can't remember right now, and I didn't look it up. Yeah. So anyway, Army punting, we gained 5 to 10 yards of field position on every punt exchanged. Folks, there were seven punts on Army side, 8 punts on Navy side. It worked out to be something like 70 yards of field position over the course of this game. That's basically where your 2 field goals came from. So that's not nothing, man. That's 6 points. Radigan's fumble recovery was obviously awesome. Then finally, controversial good, I think, is the vanilla game plan. But what other kind of game plan are you going to put in with the biggest game of the year? You've got a yearling quarterback and only his second start. He started the season at slotback. And, oh, by the way, he was hurt all summer, so he didn't take any snaps over the summer. He now is playing with the third-ranked defense in the nation, plus a decided edge on special teams. It's not sexy, folks, but they rode those advantages to a 15-0 win. And honestly, how many other college coaching staffs are there out there that would have the patience to just sit there and grind away in a punting battle like that for 3 full quarters? I honestly do not think very many people could pull that off. And then finally, I think it's worth pointing out that Army's offense found something late with that shotgun 2 fullback set. They brought in the super heavy front with the extra offensive linemen and 2 lead blockers. That seemed to free Tyler up the middle. He was getting 4 or 5 yards chunk plays, and that's also the formation they scored their touchdown from.
Yeah, agree on that last point. We've used that at different points this season, and it's always seemed to work well. However, we did have that high snap that almost got recovered by Navy out of that shotgun. So maybe not the best choice for a wet, foggy, dark game, but I did like that set. James, what did you see that was not good but not ugly and just kind of bad?
Army's offense definitely struggled against the shifting defensive sets that Navy kept bringing out, especially earlier in the game. It looked like, you know, Dale was talking about towards the end of the game when Tyler was getting those 4 or 5 yard chunk plays, some halftime adjustments were made and they were starting to get the hang of it. But earlier in the game, they definitely struggled. Not a whole lot of pure triple option for this game. A majority of Army's plays looked like they were designed, called from the sideline or the box, depending on where the coaches happen to be. A few designed hard pitches. And then the only, true reads that we saw that we could tell anyway were the midline option that led to Tyler's 28-yard run when Navy linebacker Fagot got, bit on that fullback diving through the middle. And the only other one that looked like a read was that fumble that had the fortuitous roll out of bounds after giving me about 3 heart attacks on the way out. So
I was like watching a car crash in slow motion.
Right. And I am in a room with a bunch of Navy guys and they're all going nuts. And I have my head in my hands and I'm watching it through my fingers. And then it rolls out of bounds and I'm going ballistic and the entire room is silent. It was awesome.
Oh man, what an atmosphere.
And then, more, you know, we'll call it bad is Army and the conservative game plan. I know Dan just said this is kind of a good, this vanilla game plan, but we would have liked to see a couple of throws with those Navy linebackers and safeties pushing so far up. All you need is one or two select throws, even if you don't connect on all of them. Just make them respect that a little bit and push them off. Give your fullback more on the dive and give your triple option some room to operate. We would like to see a little bit more of that. The other bad is Munkin choosing to punt from 4th and 1 on the 50. I know if we had our typical CBS sports announcers, they'd be telling us that this is analytics, 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 and I'd have to follow my rules and drink. So I'm sure that there was a book they were looking in and said, nope, we're punting. And then the last is the receiving punts in the fog. I mean, I remember the first two punts. The first one was, it looked like it bobbled in his arms a little bit. The second one was a little bit more scary. And then after that, I don't think they put a guy back there until I think the fourth quarter. Maybe once in the third quarter they put somebody back to receive a punt. But in the fourth quarter, there was a very scary, hit the ground drop, and Army jumped on it. And then after that, they stopped putting people back there. So Munkin made the right call and just saying, you know what, their punters are not fantastic. And if they're going to get an extra 10 yards out of a roll, then so be it. We'll take the ball from there. I think that was a smart choice.
Yeah, I absolutely agree on that. Moving on to the ugly Navy's uniforms. I mean, come on, they were just not cute. I don't know what it was. I will say, now to be fair, before I blast them, they looked a lot better in person and on TV than they did in the promo.
Oh man, I disagree. Oh,
really?
They were so ugly. Yeah, no, I did not. I really did not like them live and in person. And you know, when they had it on the mannequin there during college game day, I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Now I thought that was hideous. I really did.
Interesting. So they were not my favorite, to be sure. And there is no way in hell you will catch me wearing the marble countertop hoodie that Ken had. That is just tacky and trashy and not at all what I want to be seen in at all. But I didn't hate their uniforms. I wouldn't have been thrilled if they were our uniforms. But all things considered, I didn't absolutely detest them.
Oh, strong disagree. Strong disagree.
I'll say when they released that, you know, the promos and everything and saw that the helmets were going to be hand painted again, the first thing that I thought was this is going to be a redo of the Blue Angels, like the Blue Angel uniforms, which they came out with and they looked pretty good. And then the helmets in the actual game, that like the blue helmets didn't match the color of their uniforms at all. And it looked awful. And
that's
I thought that was going to be the case here. And to their credit, this year, their painted helmets actually matched their uniform. So that was an improvement, if you want to call it that, on their uniforms this year.
Yeah, well, last year they had the Staubach or whatever it was.
The Heisman.
Yeah, the Heisman. So the helmet was a different color than the letters on the jersey, which is different color than the pants. And they were all like three different shades of gold and brown. And it looked like the top of a lasagna and not a football uniform.
Yeah, that was so weird. It looked like somebody had grabbed a deflated dodgeball and just put some chunks in it.
Yeah, I get what they're going for. I understand why they do it. I'm sure they turn around and sell the helmets for a lot of money and they give them away and it's cool. But at the end of the day, I will take our history over whatever they got going on any day. That being said, Nick Detterman, I love you like a brother. I think you do a fantastic job. I don't know what was up with our fat boy uniforms this year, but they were super baggy. I don't know if anyone else noticed it, but me, I noticed it. I talked to my brother, and that was the first thing he said about the game is usually all the fat guys got the little power belly showing because they're in these skin tight, you know, jerseys. And this year they look kind of baggy. So I don't know what it was. I don't think it was a great look personally.
I think I have an answer for you, Jordan. The Nike just switched over to a new style of uniform, like their new series.
Okay.
And they came out with this series at the beginning of the year. They usually have the Power Five and bigger programs wear them for a year or so. and then they start releasing them to smaller schools. And I think that these uniforms were the new Nike uniforms. So that might have been a uniform series thing. Hopefully that isn't the case with uniforms going forward.
Yeah, that's what I figured. And I know we have the second largest Nike contract in the country. And,
wow,
and so it would make sense. Yeah, I didn't know that either until someone sent me an Army football recruiting pamphlet in the mail when I was in high school. And I was like, oh, cool. So that being said, it might not be true because everyone lies to recruits. But besides the point, I thought the uniforms themselves looked great. I just think we need to work on the cut a little bit. They definitely looked more late 90s, early 2000s, kind of the baggy tent uniforms in some ways than we're more accustomed to. Moving on from wardrobes, though, Army's fumbled pitch play. We've talked about it. It was ugly. It was a train wreck, a car crash, whatever you want to call it. It was in slow motion. I felt my heart just like descending into my body and blood stopped flowing. And then it rolled out of bounds and everything was okay. Also, when Navy got the it's not roughing the kicker, but roughing the returner where they ran.
Oh, yeah. When he running returner. Into the kicker or I'm sorry, running into the returner, interfering with the catch on a called. Jesus, now I got your disease, Jordan. Look what you did to me.
Sorry.
A fair catch. Interfering with the fair catch.
Yeah, whatever it is, and they ran it back. That didn't make me feel good. But just as a matter of principle, I hate when players start calling things by themselves. So when everybody runs down the field and they all put their arms up like it's a touchdown, even though there's like 9 penalty flags in the field, it's just a bad look. Or when they jump up and down saying, oh, we got the ball, or oh, it's a first down, and everybody else knows that you didn't get it. I just think it's a bad look. Navy did that. You hate to see it. You also hate to see Coach Ken. First of all, the man needs a Peloton. I think we need to start a GoFundMe for Ken.
Getting harsh.
Am I wrong, though? Am I wrong? Oh, I understand he's a fourth lineman, but come on. I get you're a busy man. I got it. But, I mean, you make $2 million a year. You can spend $3,000 on a Peloton. So maybe that'll be an off-season project. Either way, you know, aside from his weight, gray hair, and desperate need for a haircut, he did not act like, you know, classy Ken that he's been lauded for years, and they talked about it, even when they lost to BYU, and Ken's such a class act. For those of you that didn't watch game day, he comes on game day in this ugly-ass hoodie, bent over his laptop camera in the hotel room, and starts going off on College game day, how it's not fair that, you know, Navy's not getting more love. Mind you, what, 3 out of the 4 special segments were about Navy and Navy players. But just, oh, well, you know, Munkin's not the only competitor, and you guys act like we're not even here, and this isn't fair. And, you know, personally, I thought this was the first year that College game day has actually had it balanced, because typically they have Roger Staubach on for an hour and a half, and he just talks about how great Navy is. And so it was actually balanced this year, but Ken obviously didn't agree and kind of complained on national television. I feel like that's something you do after the fact, but hey, different strokes for different folks. And then finally, probably the ugliest play of the game, Navy tried a reverse deep in their own territory, ended up running like 20 yards behind the line of scrimmage. You know, one of our guys got through a block and he was able to, you know, tackle the Navy slot back, I think it was, and they gave up a safety. So, you know, obviously it felt good being an Army fan, but it was not a pretty play.
So I will defend Ken here, and then I'll let you move on here, Jordan. But I will say, listen, my man was in charge of most of a 14-year winning streak, and in his head, he's still at the forefront of, you know, by far and away the best academy football program that there is, and now he's dropped 4 out of the last 5, and I just think that that's a hard reality. You know, he's used to one paradigm, and the world is like shifting around him. And I, you know, you meet Navy fans all the time who sort of haven't tumbled to the reality.
And I don't disagree with you at all. I just didn't think it was a good look to start complaining that you're not getting enough press coverage while you're on TV.
And I get that, you know, expectations of personalities are one thing, but I will say that if Munkin went on next year, like let's say, and I know that it won't be, but let's say it's at Annapolis next year and game day goes down to Annapolis and does all kinds of Navy stuff and then says something like, well, you know, the last few years have been close. And then Munkin comes on and says, yeah, but did you see we skunked them last year? Like, I think that was, I would think that would be hilarious. So I get they're different people, but you know, I'll give him a break on some of that.
All right. And that's fair. I get it. He's pandering to his base. It got the Navy base all fired up. Capital Gazette, you know, put out all these articles. So I get what he's doing. I'm just saying it was kind of an awkward moment. At least I thought it was an awkward moment on game day when at first they thought he was kind of joking around. And then he starts talking about how his blood's boiling and his hands are shaking. He's never been more mad in his life. And then it was kind of awkward. And Chris Fowler is like trying to like,
yeah,
Reese Davis is trying to like, you know, like, hey, I know we have a good relationship. I don't, you know, I want to offend you. And then the whole time they're like, hey, Ken, did you see that Corso has 15 sailors and a boat in his front yard? Like, hey, go Navy.
So, oh, yeah. Man.
Whatever. Dan.
That is ugly. I'll give you that. That is ugly. All right, go ahead, Jordan.
Thank you. No, why don't you take us through the Fact or Fiction Revisited, Dan?
Okay, so Fact or Fiction Revisited.
Fact.
That is correct.
Or fiction.
Incorrect.
Jordan, you said that Army rushes for 300 yards. That was totally fiction, like a big fat idiot. I and Mike Nemeth were the only ones to say that that was fact, so you guys were right about that. Rob said that Tyrell Robinson has a huge play of 40-plus yards and that that is the difference at the end of the day. That was fiction. We all agreed that that was fact. In fact...
I put an asterisk next to my fact, and I said it might not be 40 yards, but he's going to have a big standout play. And did he or did he not have a big standout play?
What was the big standout play?
28-yard catch.
Okay. Well, you said 25 yards, so okay. I guess, Jordan, you win, and the rest of us have to learn something about giving asterisks in these fact or fictions. So next time we'll make sure College Game Day gives you enough credit, Jordan.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
And finally, I said that Army wins this game on special teams and especially punting and went on at some length, and that was true. So I got the fact, and you guys all thought I was smoking crack. So eat it.
I really did. I was like, Dan's such an idiot. He thinks special teams are going to win this game. And then someone asked me, why'd Army win the game? And I was like, well, you know, it's really due to our incredible special teams and the way we play the field position game. Oh, here's, man, Dan's article. He summarizes it pretty well.
Oh, so, man.
I will eat crow on that one, Dan. You were 100% right on that.
What are you going to do?
You called it. So moving on from Army Navy and on to the second biggest game of the year for us, Air Force. So James, for those of you that don't know, wrote the preview article this week. So in honor of that, James, let's have you take us through the Air Force preview, the bottom line, and what we can expect to see on offense.
Sure. Air Force is kind of hard to figure out. You know, they have five games against a bunch of different levels of teams, and they perform differently within those levels. So it's a hard nut to crack and try to figure out. But you know, that is Jeff Munkin's coaching staff's job and not mine. And I'm very glad for that. but bottom line, Air Force is likely better than Navy. You know, it was 40-7. They beat them.
Yeah.
But you know, on the other hand, you know, that's Air Force with 3 months to get ready for the triple op, you know, Navy's triple option, and Navy coming off of, I think they had one bye week, but you know, this is a Navy, an early season Navy team that's still significantly behind the eight ball after not practicing with contact before the season started. So that game as a comp is just, there's so many things wrong with that. It's kind of hard to use that as a comp. But I think generally Air Force is better than Navy this year, especially on offense. And they just haven't played a whole bunch of great defenses. The two best teams they've played are actually now the two participants in the Mountain West Championship game, San Jose State and And Boise State, against Boise State, it was an absolute shootout. I think the final score was like 49 to 30 something. And then in the San Jose State game, the final score was like 17-6. So, you know, we're talking about two completely different styles of games for their best two opponents. So it's really hard to unwrap. They're 3-2 overall, 2-2 in the Mountain West. Only non-Mountain West game is that Navy game. And as I said, they beat the two teams they were supposed to beat in Mountain West play, New Mexico and Utah State, handily, and then lost those two games to the teams that I guess you could say they're supposed to lose to. The combined record of the teams they've beaten is 4-16, and that their best victory in terms of winning percentage from the opponent is Navy. So it's just so hard to unpack a schedule like this and figure out how good of a team they are.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, part of it's weird because they started so late and what, 30 guys opted out or took the academic turn back or whatever on defense. So it's going to be very interesting to see what version of Air Force we get this week, because, you know, San Jose State, I know we dropped 60 on them a couple of years ago. They're really good this year. Boise State's always good. So they've done okay against good teams. And then they've beat up on, you know, the two of the worst teams in college football. So then there's Navy. We talked about that's an anomaly from Navy, but then also just not a fair performance. James, what type of offense does Air Force run? I know they're, what was supposed to be their starting quarterback is transferring.
Yeah, I don't quite know what's up with that, because he's after his 2-for-7, you know, his affirmation night. So I don't quite understand that. But I don't see a future where I get any clarity on that anyway. So I guess I'll stop worrying about it. They're a run heavy offense. They have shown that they can throw the ball, but they also, I believe they have the number 2 rushing offense in the nation right now behind Buffalo. So they run the ball, they're Air Force, and their offense is really no different than it is any other year. It's sort of a loose triple option with the ability to throw if they need to. And they lit up Boise State's defense, and they got stopped against San Jose State's defense. So again, it's really hard to unpack how good their offense is because of how they've shown up against different teams that we would think they would sort of be similar against. But at the same time, it's not a particularly different Air Force offense than we've seen in past years. It's a triple option, but not a particularly pure one. And they do like to let it rip and go downfield sometimes. So I imagine we'll see more of that on Saturday.
Absolutely. And Dan, when they do let it rip downfield, who's doing the ripping? Who's doing the catching? Take us through some of their skill position players.
Yeah, so their starting quarterback is Hazeek Daniels. He's 24 for 40 passing for 326 yards. That's 60%, which is excellent for a triple option quarterback. 2 touchdowns, no interceptions, just 1 sack. He's also carried 45 times for 236 yards, 5.2 yards per carry, and 3 touchdowns. Early in the season, he did not look good running the ball, particularly against San Jose State. But even against Boise State, Daniels wasn't the one carrying the load. It was really more their fullbacks. Lately, we've seen slot back. I think he's a slot back. Brad Roberts have 53 carries for 378 yards. That's a whopping 7.1 yards per carry. Dude has 5 touchdowns. Wide receiver Brandon Lewis is kind of in the Tyrell Robinson role. He's got 20 carries for 180 yards. That's 9 yards per carry and 1 touchdown. And then they've got the 2 big fullbacks, Timothy Jackson and Cade Remsburg. Those guys have 55 carries for, you know, more than 300 yards. They're averaging something like 5.5-6 yards per carry and 1 touchdown. This year especially, I think Air Force has been leaning on the fullback dive more because Daniels, at least in the early part of the season, didn't quite look ready for prime time, but they clearly figured it out over the past couple of weeks.
Yeah. And I mean, it's good to see if you're an Air Force fan, they've started figuring it out and finding a new identity. They've really had to find a new identity on defense though. James, what has happened? Like I alluded to, they had close to 30 players, if not more, opt out, not play this fall. Most of them were on defense. Most of them were starters. They've really had to completely rebuild this offense this year. How has that gone for them?
Again, it's. I mean, they held San Jose State, who's going to the Mountain West Championship game, to 17 points. So they certainly showed up that day. But you're right, they're struggling. They have some starters gone. They sort of gave up on the season early and then had to scrap together a defense in mid-October. You know, who knows? Now that defense that they sort of scrapped together had been preparing for Navy for, you know, call it 3 months, because that was going to be the only game on their schedule. But now they've been playing a Mountain West schedule. They've gotten away from that. They have had one bye week to prepare for the option. But we have also been preparing for the option for the last week. So the extra week off, you know, probably won't give them that much of an edge. But, you know, we'll see. It's very hard to figure out how legitimate this defense is. It is a skeleton of last year's defense, and we've gotten very inconsistent results in not that many games. So I hate to kind of keep saying who knows, but that's sort of the theme right now because of the team that we're up against.
Well, yeah, they're giving up about 106 yards per game, but I think that's largely a function of the teams that they've played. You know, Boise ran for 415 yards on them, which is insane. A lot of the points that Air Force wound up scoring, they scored late in that game. And then Utah State, which is terrible, ran for 109 at 4.2 yards per carry. I do not think this team has very good linebackers, either leading tackle or as a cornerback. He's got 30 tackles. Their next leading tackle or as a defensive tackle, he's got 23 tackles, and then their next leading tackler is a safety. So you have to go four deep to find a linebacker in their list of tacklers. I would hope that Army could make something out of that. Certainly it's nothing like what we saw from Navy last week.
Yeah, Navy's entire defense was built around their linebackers, but specifically Diego Fago. So it'll be interesting to see if we can exploit some of the weaknesses. And another thing to consider is when we compare Army and Navy, we tend to have mutual opponents, whether it's Tulane or another team in the American or someone in Conference USA. But, you know, typically East Coast, Middle America football, everyone who Air Force plays is in the Mountain West and or the Pac-12. Not the Pac-12 this season, but Mountain West this season. And their offenses are completely different, and their defenses are completely different. And then just the way they play football is completely different. So, yes, Air Force runs a very traditional version of the triple option, but the teams they run it against have completely different offensive, defensive philosophies than we do. So, for what it's worth, that just makes it even more difficult to really kind of have the eye test and look and compare these statistics. But at the end of the day, the biggest difference between Air Force and Army is the quality of the opponents. So Air Force fans are always saying that Army plays an FCS schedule because they're not in a, quote, elite conference. It's the Mountain West. It's a joke. Army's 2-2 against bowl-eligible teams with a win over a division winner on the road. It's UTSA. And Air Force has played two good teams, Boise State and San Jose State, like we've talked about, did not perform well against either of those teams. They lost both of those games by 10-plus points. San Jose State held them to just 206 yards rushing. So that's another thing to consider is, okay, they beat up on two really bad teams. They ran all over Navy. Who the heck knows what was going on with that Navy team? I know it was, you know, close after that BYU blowout, and things are weird. At the end of the day, it's just really hard to make a prediction on this and understand what's going to happen. And that's why the line came out at Pick'em, and just, you know, we don't know who the best team is going to be on Saturday, but whoever has the more complete team on Saturday is going to win the football game, in my opinion.
So when it comes to Air Force's secondary or linebackers and safeties, particularly, I would say they're watching the Army-Navy game and saying, okay, what did Navy do wrong? Or what did they do right? And I think that there's a good chance we see Air Force come out with those linebackers up, you know, right on top of the line of scrimmage like we saw with Navy. And if that's the case, Munkin's going to have to throw more.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if they don't come up and line up on the – basically on the line of scrimmage, then Buchanan and McCoy better have a day.
Exactly. And I think if I'm a linebacker who did not start last year, who was second or third on the depth chart, people in front of me have opted out, whatever. I'm now playing. And I'm going to look at what Navy did. Oh, my, they held Army to 150 yards rushing. Okay, yeah, let's play up 2 inches off the – 2 yards off the line of scrimmage. I think that's great. I think that's how they're going to come out. And I think first drive, we're going to try to establish the fullback drive. We're going to do what Brent Davis always does. And we're not going to get anywhere. I think on the second drive, we need to start throwing the ball. And I'm not saying we do a 50-yard bomb, but if you know the safeties are playing up in the middle, who's to say we don't throw a little curl route to the outside? 5-10 yards, get behind the safeties who are playing up close on the line of scrimmage. All of a sudden, now the safeties have to back up a little bit. Maybe they bring that fifth down down lineman up back into the middle of the field, and then we can start getting 3 yards on the carry. So,
well, recall last year, Jabari Laws, who was a yearling, and I believe his second start went 9 of 11 passing for over 200 yards in this game. So I wouldn't necessarily count on seeing a repeat of the Army-Navy game.
And that was before Air Force knocked him out with the targeting for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we don't know what we're going to see from defensively from Air Force, if they're going to try their own thing or if they're going to see what Navy did and worked. But at the end of the day, the play calling for Army-Navy is different than the play calling for Air Force. Because Jeff Munkin punted on 4th and 1 against Navy, 2 years ago? He went for it against Air Force to win the game. So yeah,
absolutely.
Different dynamics with the coaches, different play calling. I absolutely think we're going to throw the ball more this week. And it will be interesting to see what version of Air Force's defense we see, but also what version of offense, because there have been games this season where they've thrown the ball quite a bit and then other games where they've, you know, barely thrown it at all. So I don't think we're going to see a Pac-12 air raid showdown, but I think we're going to see more throwing than we've seen in previous years and definitely more than we saw in the Army Navy game.
One thing I think is worth pointing out here, Jordan, as we're sort of giving our thoughts, is the weather. It's supposed to be a high of 33 on Saturday with a low of 25. It's going to be freaking cold out there.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a universe in which Coach Munkin tries to play the same game plan that he just played to force a mistake from Air Force and just see if he's got the better team on special teams, which he very well may. You know, Air Force has not seen a defense like they're about to see this Saturday. And I know that they think that they have, but Army is the number 3 ranked total defense. They are the number 1 defense against the pass. These guys are good. They are better than you think they are.
Yeah, I agree. James, what do you think?
I think that the weather is, I would not be surprised if I'm sitting at home watching the game and can't see a damn thing again in the first half. I kind of hope we bring out the same uniforms again, not to give Air Force special treatment, but the camouflage seems to work. But I would not be surprised to see a lot of passing. The weather could definitely put a kibosh on that. You know, if you can't see a punt coming, how well can you see a pass coming? I think one of the jokes from the CBS announcers in the Army-Navy game, when there was what looked like a pass interference towards the end of the first half on Army that didn't get called, they said, well, it's not a catchable ball if you can't see it.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah.
So we'll see. The weather could put a screw in that, but I would imagine there will be more attempts from Army this game.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. Now it's time to disagree a little bit. We're going to move on to fact or fiction. I'm going to come out hot. Air Force has more than 100 yards passing. Dan, what do you think?
I think that's fiction. If they try to throw all over the place, I think they're going to give up a couple interceptions.
Okay, James?
I'm going fiction. They have the second best rushing offense in the country right now. It's been working for them against, you know, some teams. And why would they go away from their year-long game plan for what could be the last game of their season?
Yeah, that's fair. I don't think their rushing attack is as good as it is on paper. I think it's been little overblown with some lopsided games and statistical padding. I think they will throw the ball. I think they're going to be at or close to 100 yards. Like I said, I don't think they're going to come out and throw for 300 yards or 400 yards, but I think 100 is doable, especially if our defense plays against the run the way they did against Navy. Dan, what do you got?
My fact or fiction is that Army's offense looks dramatically better this week. And I've got two reasons. One, we already talked about Air Force's linebackers, probably not as good as Navy's. I definitely do not think Air Force has anybody to match Diego Fago. But also, and this is probably more important, Army's not coming off two bye weeks. You know, we've seen the Black Knights come out flat after multiple bye weeks pretty much every time this season. And I think that that includes this past game. I really think that just having just played a game, these guys will look monumentally better than they did.
Yeah, I agree. Fact, you said everything.
I'm going fact as well.
Agreed. All right, then fact agreement.
Woohoo. All right, and finally, James, what do you got?
I have Army survives the coaching carousel. And not only am I talking about Jeff Monken, but also Nate Woody, the defensive coordinator, who is likely a hot ticket item as Jay Bateman was 2 years ago.
Dano?
Wow, that's a good question. Multiple people in the Firsty Club have opined to me privately that Nate Woody is going to leave ASAP. So I guess I will agree with that and assume that somebody knows something. So I will say fiction. Boy, I'm not ready for him to leave, though. He's so good.
Yeah, he's phenomenal. And just the way he turned the defense around, you know, even from last year, has just been incredible. James, I hate that you threw the thing about Nate Woody in there, because if you had said Army survives a coaching carousel, I would have said, yeah, absolutely, fact. Vanderbilt's job is filled. No way Munkin's going to coach at Auburn. We're good. We're safe. Munkin wants to stay at West Point. We're fine. But Nate Woody.
The only job that worries me, Munkin-wise, at this moment on Monday afternoon is Illinois. And it doesn't worry me a lot, but it worries me more than any other job.
His family's from Illinois. He went to school in Illinois. I don't know.
And it's a Big Ten school where they like to run the football. And they've been used to running the football.
Oh, you guys are killing me with that. Listen, he has got a great job coaching against one of his very best friends in the biggest game of the year, every single year. He could probably make more money elsewhere, but he's not exactly underpaid at Army. I mean, come on. One of the tricks to being happy in life, I got to be honest with you guys, is knowing when life is going good. And that includes Jeff Monken.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a stable job for the next 30 years if he wants it. I mean,
yeah.
He would really have to slide to get fired at this point. And yeah, okay, could he go coach at a Vanderbilt or in Illinois and make an extra million or two a year for the next 5 years and then get fired? Yeah, but he could also have a stable job for the next 20 to 30 years of his life.
Yeah, so I was a rabble-rouser. You guys know that. Jeff's wife, Beth, cheered at University of Florida, and so she was an assistant cheer coach at West Point when I was there. She's one of our Rabs coaches. I remember talking to her because I was the only person on that squad who understood football. And you would be amazed how many of the people thought, oh, when they're in the huddle on offense, that's when we're supposed to scream. It's like, no, that's when you shut up. Like, we're on offense, you don't cheer. Apart from that, though, Beth and I got kind of close. We're friends on Facebook. And I remember talking to her during the 2-10 season. And it sucked. They had just gotten there. It was not going well. And I asked her, well, do you guys like Army? Are you happy here? And she said, one, we're not used to losing. And two, we miss the South. We miss the weather. We miss all our friends in Georgia. I think they have a home in Savannah or New Smyrna Beach or maybe both. I don't know. They love the South. And for that reason, I don't think Jeff is going to leave to go to another school in the Northeast. I think if he leaves, he's going to go to a school in the South. But I think to leave and go to Illinois, and sure, you're getting paid $1 million more, but how much more pressure is there? And how much more drama is there? And the inability to do what you want to do, I don't know if that's worth it. And I don't know the man. And, you know, like I said, this information's 5 years old that I got from Beth, and they very well could be very happy. I see things on Facebook and look like they really love West Point, just as a family, apart from the football aspect. But I don't think he's going to leave to go to another school where he has to rebuild and deal with the drama of a big program and then still not be ultimately, I think, where they want to end up in, you know, 10 or 20 years. Now, in 10 or 15, 20 years, it'll be a different conversation. Maybe he goes back to her Southern or Georgia Tech. Who the hell knows? But I think at this moment in time, for financial reasons on behalf of Illinois and some of these other schools that are struggling with COVID and buyouts and everything, I don't think Jeff's going to leave. Very long-winded answer, I know. Nate Woody, it's been a year. It's not unheard of. I'm going to go ahead and say fact that we're going to survive the coaching carousel for major coaches, i.e. offensive defensive coordinator and Coach Monken.
All right.
So I guess we'll see. Let's hope.
And Jordan and I fact.
All right. So with that, thank you for listening to the show, everybody. We really appreciate it. If you missed it last week, we are the number one football podcast in Burkina Faso in West Africa. Obviously, one day we would love to be the number one football podcast in America, and you're the people who can make that happen. Dan, are you hating on me right now?
No, it's coming. We're going to get there.
Okay. All right, we're going to grind it out. We'll see where it goes. It starts with you guys leaving reviews. We did that a couple seasons ago. You guys left some hilarious reviews. If you leave reviews, we'll read them on the show. Additionally, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff, and become a Patreon, especially join the First D Club. You'll get to interact with us on game day on Facebook.
Which is
wild.
Awesome.
I think we had, 300-plus comments on the thread.
There's some really knowledgeable guys on there. They bring a really interesting perspective that we try to include as much as we can. I liked it a lot.
Yeah. So if your wife and kids are sick and tired of hearing you rant about Army football and none of your friends get it, join the First D Club. We'll get it. Also, make sure you support Emblem Athletic. They're good people doing good things. Mike Nemeth was on the show last week. And with that, Dan, do you have a favorite thing, or are you just ready to roll right into Air Force?
Yeah, I'm ready to roll right into Air Force. Thank you for asking.
I'm just checking because, you know, you got a lot going on in your life.
I got a lot going on, but not for the podcast. Absolutely.
All right.
If you know
fine.
Me personally, ask.
Okay. Sounds good. And with that, we're going to sign off this week. Go Army, beat Air Force.
Beat them.
Beat them.